We're going to go back to Ephesians now. We're going back to chapter 6. We're starting chapter 6. Lord willing, I'm just going to get through, but I will get through, Lord willing, verses 1 through 4. Now, by way of reminder, before we get started with those verses, the apostle in chapter 5 began to speak of submission to and right reverence of lawful authority with the context, what we might call domestic relationships. At the same time, Paul has made it clear that those in authority are expected by the Lord to exercise their power faithfully, righteously, equitably, consistently, with kindness. By the Holy Ghost, Paul has spoken briefly but powerfully on the submission of a wife to her husband, and this insofar as at all possible with cheerfulness and reverence, though never sinfully. The apostle has also spoken again briefly of the husband's duty to his wife, and in both cases, he has given by way of example the relationship of Christ and his body, the church. We can truly say that the apostle has spoken briefly, but comprehended much in what he has commanded and taught. Of course, the scriptures contain many more specifics and verses and whole passages concerning the duties and places of husbands and wives. Then we could also point to the many commandments and teachings and instructions and precepts of scripture which deal in general with Christian character and behavior, and of course make application to husbands and wives. And then there's the law of love, the moral law concerning our duties to others, which Christ Jesus also comprehended as well this way: therefore, all things whatsoever ye would that men should do to you, do ye even so to them, for this is the law and the prophets. So we have so many different verses that speak of this very issue, husbands and wives. Colossians 3:18 says, wives, submit yourselves unto your own husbands as is fit in the Lord. And also in 19, husbands, love your wives and be not bitter against them. And that's to act or speak in a bitter way, with bitterness against them. What the scriptures command and instruct and teach, we are to seek to do, and more consistently and from the heart in love, willingly, cheerfully, and by the grace of God, consistently. Those who will not do so will reap what they sow, and even reap a bountiful harvest in some cases. Those who seek to be obedient will be blessed, richly blessed. In many ways, next, in the context of religious submission and the godly exercise of authority, the apostle moves on to children and parents. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right, verse 1. Here the apostle of Christ speaking, let me stress, for Christ, addresses children very directly, including all the children sitting here today. This is the word of the Lord. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. The Lord, who not only sees all that we do and hears all that we say, but also who knows the thoughts and intents of our heart, does not tell children, including you children, to obey your parents only when you feel like it, or only when you think you'll get caught if you don't obey them. And he does not tell you to obey your parents only when you think they're acting fairly or wisely or perfectly, insofar as you think anyway. The command is to obey your parents in the Lord. What does this mean, to obey your parents in the Lord? In the Lord, I will tell you plainly what it means. It means that the Lord has commanded you to obey your parents, and since it is his command, you are obeying him by obeying his command, that is, to be obedient to your parents. So if you willingly, knowingly disobey your parents, you are disobeying and defying the Lord. And we know, and you know, all of you, that it's a fearful thing to disobey and defy the Lord by disobeying his commandment to obey your parents, the parents he's given you, including to guide and direct and rule and discipline you. The commandment, children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right, means you are to obey your parents without backtalk, without bitterness, without anger, or in any way being disrespectful, including as to the tone of your voice or the look on your face. And parents are not to accept disrespect for the children's sake and for the office you hold, if you will, as parents. You're not to accept disrespect, not in tone of voice, not in look on the face. If it's obvious, it's a look of contempt. Children are to cheerfully and promptly obey, knowing that the Lord has commanded it, and knowing also that the Lord will bless you. He'll bless you for obeying him and obeying in such a way as pleases him, while at the same time also knowing that if you disobey this commandment of his, you will offend him and you will hurt yourself as well. Colossians 3, verse 20 says, "Children, obey your parents in all things, for this is well-pleasing unto the Lord." When we are well-pleasing unto the Lord, there is a blessing there for us as well. Children, obey your parents in the Lord. It's clear that children are never to obey their parents if they're sure, very sure, that to do so would be to sin against the Lord. Children, too, must be careful not to obey anyone who commands them to do what they know is clearly sinful. I said sinful. Child may believe the parent has told them to do something that they think does not make much sense, or maybe they think it's a waste of time or foolish or unfair, but children need to understand that they are children. They have much to learn, and what their parent instructs them to do, which they may think is wasteful or doesn't make sense, it may well be anything but that. In truth, it may be very much for their own good, and they'll see that one day then. But even if a parent clearly instructs a child to do what seems to be what I summarized, so long as it doesn't cause the child to do what is very clearly sinful, this command is to obey. Obey. Obey your parents and the Lord, for this is right, as our text declares. It is the only right way. This is right. That is, in the eyes of the Lord who has commanded it. This is the right, righteous, good, obedient, and pleasing to the Lord way, to obey your parents in the Lord from the heart and with reverence, and he will bless you. He will bless you for it. At the same time, to disobey your parents or to obey in a surly or disrespectful way is not pleasing to the Lord. It is ungodly. It will injure you as a person. It will injure your character. It will hinder your growth into the stature of a good, we would hope, godly and honorable true man or true woman. Do you want to grow up to be an honorable, true, we hope, godly man or woman? Then obey the commandment. Obey the commandment and obey your parents in the Lord. And a word also on chastisement or proper punishment for disobedience. At the time they're chastened or disciplined or punished, I would say most children, if not all children, would rather their parents neglected that duty. I mean, how many children want to be spanked, for instance, if they can avoid it? How many children enjoy receiving a strong correction and a stern warning and rebuke? But the parents who grow lax in the day-to-day discipline of their children are not being faithful to the Lord, and they're not loving their children as they ought. And children have to understand that. Parents, yes, but children also. You can't get lax in this, parents and children. You have to understand this is for your own good. It doesn't matter, parents, if you have one child or 20 children, you must not grow weary in well-doing when it comes to all your children and your duties to the Lord, and certainly including then in discipline. The apostle will touch on that in verse 4, just as the scriptures speak on the issue elsewhere. We can't be inconsistent. Start out here, and we're doing our job, and then time wears on, and I don't know, do we get tired of parenting or something? I've seen it. And then with the younger ones, there's just a total change. That's not right. That's a dereliction of duty. It's also not love for the children. But as for children and discipline, I have never met a grown man or woman whose parents consistently and rightly, even if not perfectly, disciplined them, who was anything but grateful and even proud to have been raised in such a way. With regard to discipline and in anticipation of verse 4, and I've talked about these verses before. I don't think it was all that long ago, maybe 6 months, I don't know, maybe more. The times go by. But in anticipation of verse 4, and concerning what the apostle has to say to fathers, particularly this, provoke not your children to wrath, I want to briefly just summarize my own experience as a child with my own father. There's a reason for this. And I'm getting old enough now, I can do this, and you have to bear with me. You know, I can go into these kind of things and reminisce. No, there's a reason for this. I just want to, with regard to provoke not your children to wrath, I want to talk about a man who was not a Christian. I want to talk about a man who had, I guess I would say if he would have had every excuse to discipline me this way that would provoke me to wrath. I mean, if ever there was a man, I think it would have been him. And yet, I want to tell you a little bit more what he didn't do than what he did do. My own father was not a Christian until I was 25 years old. He was raised in a very tough, semi-rural outskirt of Madison. It was a sort of, to some extent, a shanty town, which was full of immigrants and various nationalities and several races, lots of tension, lots of conflict. His dad expected him to be tough. He expected him to be tough. He expected him not to take anything, not to back down from anyone, and to use his fists freely. Dad was raised during the Depression. He was involved, as you know, in harrowing, heavy casualty combat as a 19-year-old. He turned 20 in a prisoner of war camp. He endured and suffered much before he was liberated. Little did I realize, as my father and I his child, and while he was raising me, he was continuing to suffer physically and emotionally and in his mind all his life. You don't see what he saw. You don't see what he saw. Experience what he experienced and just have it shut off when you're out of it. It was there. I say little did I know, because he never made one word of complaint or let on for one moment what he had suffered and what he was suffering. Then he was back in for the Korean War. He was ready to go back into combat if called to do so, but of course the Air Force made him a gunnery instructor. When I was 4, he suffered a terrible motorcycle wreck during his part-time job as a paper carrier. He was in a coma for over a month till he began farming. He worked a job and a half. After he started farming, he worked the equivalent of 2 full-time jobs. Now, considering how he was raised and what he had experienced and the life he led, it's no surprise when it came to us, especially us boys, especially the older boys, that he had very little time for foolishness, no patience with folly, no tolerance for back talk whatsoever. Not in the least. And while he was very, very gentle with the girls, if he had a soft spot as a parent, he was maybe too gentle with the girls, a little too, couldn't quite bring himself there to discipline so much, but they were taken care of by my mother, who did the job well too. But when it came to us boys, especially at least us older boys, he expected us to grow up very quick. And I suppose in some ways he treated us like men when we were quite young. His words and his discipline would seem to all of you, I don't say may seem, I think they would seem to all of you to be often hard and harsh when he disciplined us. I will say as much threatened use of the big wide black belt he wore, the much threatened use of that translated into not many uses. Since his stern look, his stern threat from a man like this, such a manly, tough man with such an intimidating look, that coupled with often this iron grip on the arm, that was usually enough to set the boy straight. And now I know he really didn't want to use the belt. I don't think so. Well, maybe he did more than I realized, but he didn't really want to, and he was probably glad he didn't have to resort to it, because when he did, he used it right. But this, and ye fathers, provoke not your children to wrath. As much as I trembled in his, seemed to be his awful presence when he had been provoked, as a child, and even as a young man growing up, yet I knew he was always, and he always did, he always acted, as we look at this, provoke not your children to wrath, he acted fair, equitable, reasonable, consistent, maybe hard, maybe harsh, people would say, but it was reasonable in one sense, And his discipline was inflicted, and it was over. It was done. That was the last I ever heard about it. The black storm clouds were suddenly there. The terrible lightning was flashing. The thunder was crashing. The downpour came, and then suddenly it was over. It was over. Over forever. I was still his boy. The sky was blue again. The sun was shining. And that was that. I mean, he never said, you know, then hugged us and reassured us that he loved us. It wasn't his way. But it was done. Also, as to his discipline, Dad never, and this, provoke not your children to wrath. Dad never, ever, ever threw in our face past mistakes or misbehavior. If we were doing the same thing again, that's different. Especially since we had already been told, you do that again, I pity you. Or you do that again, you're going to get it and get it good. He's a man of his word. But he never threw anything into our face unless we did it again. It was over. It was past. The record was wiped clean. Never held anything over our head. When it was done, it was done. He never once, I can never remember him speaking, yes, directly. Some would say very harshly, like a hard man. But he was never sarcastic. He was never caustic. He never taunted us. He never accused us of anything he did not know to be absolutely true. He always acted in his discipline honestly, honorably, consistently, even if intensely. And he always acted like a man disciplining children, not a child taunting a child or disciplining another or trying to provoke a child because provoked to wrath, a man disciplining his children. And I tell you, he never agreed to a request from us unless he was sure he could follow through when the time came. And if he gave his word, whether to grant a privilege asked or to follow through on a punishment threatened, he kept it. Now, the summation to all this, I said, is he didn't provoke us to wrath, the wrath the apostle speaks of in verse 4. In spite of how he was raised, his background, the kind of man he was, by the way, how it shaped him, and his father was, I have to say, a pretty hard man. I loved him as a grandpa, but, you know, he had a hard life too, and his mother too. But he didn't provoke us to wrath. And he didn't bring us up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. The younger ones, he was a Christian for some, a lot of their upbringing, but not for mine. But he didn't provoke us to wrath. He may not have been so sensitive to us boys' feelings at times. I know, though, he was always sensitive to our true needs, as a father should be. All of his children's needs, boys and girls. And not just needs, but he always found time to, for instance, take us swimming and to the AW drive-in once a year. He would find time for that. Or to haul our animals to the fair or pick up some root beer occasionally on a Saturday night for root beer and popcorn. He took us to the doctor when he was so pressed for time, but if my mother couldn't in, he went and back. I'm just saying, here's a man that had every excuse not to be a father like that. And here's a man that many people would fault. Oh, he's too harsh. Oh, he's too hard. Oh, he's got you working too hard too soon. Nothing of the sort. Wouldn't trade it for anything. May not have been easy. But when it comes to this, provoking your children to wrath, he's an example. I say this is an example for us. I'll tell you also, he was always there for us. Made sure, him and my mother, that we went to church and Sunday school because that's best for children. And I'll tell you this, too. I say he was there for us. When we were little, that man who I saw unsettle and silence blowhards, for instance, or some guy acting tough and out of line, suddenly I see the man, see the look on his on my dad's face, and all of a sudden he was backtracking really fast. That man would come into our bedroom when we were little, just quietly walk up the stairs, silently listen while we said a nighttime prayer, lean down, offer his face for us to give him a kiss, and out the door he went. He was there, though. He was there for us. It meant everything to me. Everything. I look back on that now, and I wouldn't trade that memory for anything. That man's man coming up there, and I can still smell his, you know, he always shaved first. You know, I can still smell it. That's just there's just such inestimable value to that for a child to have some of those kind of memories. So when it comes to get back to what I should be talking about, that was him. I always knew he'd protect us with his life. I always knew he didn't bring us up in the nurture and the admonition of the Lord. And sometimes, you know, I felt little when I was disciplined, but I never felt belittled. And that's essential. And that goes right to this, that we're not to provoke children to wrath. I mean, after he got saved, I mean, I know there was things he should have done differently. And after he got saved, this man actually apologized for mistakes he'd made. Father should be able to do that, not lose any respect. I didn't lose my respect for him. I respected and revered him all the more. You should revere your fathers, and they should earn that reverence. But the point is, I thank God that my dad did not shrink from his duty to discipline me. You children should thank God if your father disciplines you. And going to this provoke not to wrath, yeah, he was on the hard side. Wasn't on the soft side, he's on the hard side. But his discipline was administered in such a way it did not provoke me to wrath. And he wasn't a Christian. And so fathers, you know, we have that example. And there's others in fathers that aren't even Christian. So we ought to then be challenged to do these things right. But that's in anticipation of verse 4. I better get through verse, what are we on? One yet? Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. And someday, mark my words, you will thank the Lord for parents who love you enough to discipline you when you disobey. Verse 2, honor thy father and mother, which is the first commandment with promise. The Lord, by his apostle, has first commanded children to obey their parents in the Lord. And, of course, obey from the heart with respect and properly as is right. Now, in verse 2, he commands, honor thy father and mother. So there's something more than just bare obedience, even if you seek to do it respectfully and not grumbling and so on and so forth. There's a broader issue here as well. Of course, honoring your father and your mother when you're not yet of age includes obeying them and from the heart without grumbling, complaining, or doing it sullenly and so forth. Even when you're grown, you can listen to what your father or mother might have to say. And you know, it doesn't hurt to take it into account. They may have some experience that, you know, you will have too eventually, and you might learn something that way. But it's important that children know they're to do more than obey their parents when they're under their roof, even with regard to just obeying with a cheerful way and a right way. The command of the Lord is to honor your father and mother. This means literally to reverence and value your parents. And of course, there comes a day when children grow up and they're no longer subject to their parents with regard to obedience and discipline, but they are always to reverence and value their parents. It's true, there are some parents in this world that are as brute beasts. It's impossible. It's so bad, it is impossible for children to reverence and value them. That is to honor them. It would be impossible and in some cases even wrong. But the general rule is honor thy father and thy mother. They may have done things you cannot honor. They may have done things you dare not honor even. Nor should you even pretend to honor. But some parents may be worthy of more honor even. Some not as much, but we must honor our parents. Certainly those with parents who, though not perfect, perhaps not even Christian, yet with the light they have had labored to be good parents, these deserve to be honored by their children, and the Lord expects it. So take care that you do, and you don't dishonor the Lord by dishonoring your parents. Honor thy father and mother, which is the first commandment with promise, verse 3, that it may be well with thee, and thou mayest live long on the earth. Well, the commandments were given this way, this fifth commandment. Exodus 20, verse 12, honor thy father and thy mother, that thy days may be long upon the land which the Lord thy God giveth thee. That's the promise he's talking about. Also in Deuteronomy, it's somewhat expanded and Same commandment, honor, and same promise. Honor thy father and thy mother, as the Lord thy God hath commanded thee, that thy days may be prolonged, and that it may go well with thee in the land which the Lord thy God giveth thee. I mean, I would first say there is a negative side to that, that it will go well with you, that thy days may be prolonged, dishonor your parents, and you may expect that it could be the other way around. But as for this promise connected to obedience in the fifth commandment, all men, by men, I mean all human beings, men, women, and children, because we have a promise here, a reward for obedience, while all men, women, and children are commanded to obey the Lord in all things. And we know that this means that we are to do the will of the Lord in all that he commands us and refrain from all that he forbids, and we're to do it from the heart in all sincerity, truth, and love. Anything less is unrighteousness and sin and merits eternal condemnation. That's why no man, woman, child, no human being can be saved by obedience to the law, but we do have this obligation. Those who are in Christ are forever justified by his imputed righteousness and will never be condemned, and further are cleansed of by his blood, cleansed of sin day by day, cleansed of unrighteousness, and kept in relationship with him as his children. Further, by our union with Christ, and this is what I want to get at, is for this promise, this blessing, our good works are sanctified. Now, you say, well, is that a good work? Well, it's a commandment, and it's always right to obey the Lord. And even our good works are sanctified and made acceptable to the Lord. And the Lord has promised to reward those who faithfully serve him. Not so with the unsaved, unless and until they're saved and in Christ. Now, as to this promise of reward contained in the fifth commandment, we know that not all who honor their father and mother do live long lives on this earth. But the point is clearly this. God has promised what he has promised, and we as Christians, saved and sanctified in his sight, should accept this as a general rule with understanding that the Lord sometimes calls even his faithful servants home after a shorter life, even if they've been faithful in all things, including to honor their father and their mother. But there is a promise here. There is cause to accept, receive the promise, and cleave to the promise. It's a specific and personal promise. Now, it does say this too, which is the first commandment with promise, speaking of the fifth commandment. This may seem a little confusing, since the second commandment contains what seems to be a promise. Let me read it. Exodus 20, the verse 4 through 6. Thou shalt not make unto thee any graven image or any likeness of anything that is in the heaven above, or that is in the earth beneath, or that is in the water under the earth. Thou shalt not bow down thyself to them, nor serve them, for I, the Lord thy God, am a jealous God, visiting the iniquity of the fathers upon the children unto the third and fourth generation of them that hate me, and showing mercy unto thousands of them that love me and keep my commandments. The thing I would say is concerning the two promises, and that is a form of a promise that God will do what God says he will do, but the promise contained in this second commandment is really not so much as of a promise. It's a general declaration or assertion concerning the righteousness of the Lord. And in this commandment we have, of the fifth commandment, more of a personal and immediate promise. Now, I should stress one more thing before I move on to verse 4. As you well know and have been, I trust, well taught, each commandment comprehends all sins and all duties of the same kind, or we could say category. And, of course, also the law is spiritual and reaches to the heart, that is, to the very thoughts and intents of the heart. But I say all commandment involves all sins at the same time, in the positive sense, all duties of the same kind. And so I want to stress that this fifth commandment, I want to stress its importance, which is the first commandment, the second table, the moral law, honor thy father and thy mother. This further comprehends submission and obedience and reverence to all authority, which God has commanded and ordained, including family government, certainly, but church government, civil government. So it's very important that parents teach and train their children in such a way as to reverence and obey and honor family government, if you will, their father and their mother, obey and honor and reverence, so that then they will also, by extension, please God and obey God with regard to other governments. And those that are spoiled in their homes and aren't trained to reverence and obey their parents, what happens? Well, you know what happens. If by one way or another they're not taught to reverence and obey their parents. Now, when the apostle earlier dealt with the submission of wives to husbands, he then moved very quickly to speak of the duty of husbands to wives. And he's done the same thing here with children and parents, though he speaks specifically of fathers, since fathers are the head of their wife and also of the whole family. So everybody, I suppose, many people like to be in a position of authority. Well, there are duties that come with that. And you're held more accountable than those that don't have that duty. So fathers need to really be the head of the family and the wife. And ye fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. Wrath means hot anger. Colossians 3, the verse 21, fathers, provoke not your children to anger, lest they be discouraged. That means disheartened. Discouraged, disheartened. I've already spoken of this. Sort of the negative side of it. I said, I was talking about my father. I said he never did any of these things. And so I've spoken of it. I'll just say it's widely agreed by sound, faithful ministers of Christ that the apostle is warning fathers not to speak to and act toward their children in such a way as to cause them to become first disheartened and then inwardly full of wrath. Fathers, discipline your children like adults disciplining children. If you want to know how children are provoked to wrath, look at two children and how one will provoke the other one to wrath. But when it becomes father and child, parent and child, the child can't have that outlet of what they do toward the other child. Not that that's good. Now, I did already cover this. I will just say a little bit more on the positive side of the equation. It's important for fathers and, of course, mothers to be consistent, strong but compassionate, equitable, firm and fair in the discipline and upbringing of their children. It's important to always discipline and train your children as an adult training children. I have talked so much over the years about parents and children, more than I realize even as I look back. So I don't believe I have to go on and on today. I would just say parents should rightly, firmly, fairly discipline and train their children right from the start, not tolerate disobedience or disrespectful attitudes, words, or actions. Discipline must be appropriate, consistent, not meted out, or meted out, either one, based on what sort of a day a parent is having at the time or some such thing. You need to be consistent. You need to be equitable all the way across with all the children. You need to be fair. Parents have to strive by word and deed also to be worthy of their children's honor, their love, their reverence, and truth. We've all failed, and we all fail in various ways. We know it. We all wish we would have done things different in various ways. And yet the Lord has put in a child, and this is a great blessing for you parents, the Lord has put in a child to love and respect his or her parents. Children will overlook and quickly forget the simple, and they should, the simple, genuine, occasional shortcomings of a parent. They will, and we thank the Lord that it's so. We do thank the Lord that it's so. But parents must strive to speak to and act towards and discipline and train and guide their children in firmness, love, equity, seeking to never err to the extreme of the one side or the other, harsh, cold authoritarianism, or on the other hand, many people don't realize how dangerous it is, the extreme of trying to earn a child's favor by pandering to them, spoiling them, playing the buddy to them. The parent who foolishly takes the route of playing the buddy, really it's playing the fool for their child, obliterates a sacred, vital, beneficial, circumscribing boundary which ought to exist even in the most warm and loving parental-child relationship. And we ought to have warm and loving parental-child relationships. The other extreme, the parent is cold and over-authoritative, perhaps even acerbic, caustic, lacking in warmth, understanding, and love. That parent builds up a destructive emotional wall between himself or herself and that child and does harm to the tender heart of the child and perhaps even hardens the child's heart. We also have here the nurture and admonition of the Lord. Nurture, I will just say this and close. The meaning is teaching and training up a child, including chastening as necessary. It comprehends all of that. admonition is warning. Warning a child. And that's very, very important. And often with that goes a rebuke, but certainly a warning of what disobedient behavior or reckless behavior or irreverent behavior, how God does hate this and how they are going to hurt themselves if they don't learn to hate it as well. And it says the admonition of the Lord. So it's always according to the Lord's will, us seeking to do things, the parents, in a way that does please the Lord and which is consistent with His word. Amen.